This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
At the end of this segment, we'll be giving away tickets to see the Capitals a week from yesterday. 6 days out, Thursday night against the Dallas Stars. You've got to be listening to Grant and Danny here on The Fan. We're excited for the start of the football season. However, we know some folks around us may have lost a friend or family member recently. The exclusive sponsor of our show is the law firm Cundori & Murad, and they're going to guide you through the difficult probate administration process if needed. They'll help bring clarity and closure to a loved one's estate. Schedule a free consultation with their probate and estate planning attorneys today. Go to kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you so you can get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. Remember, Caps tickets at the end of the segment. Let's scout the opponent. All right, we've had Ravens fans condescending to us all hour.
Chirping us.
So let's find out about this Super Bowl-bound juggernaut up in Baltimore that probably hasn't lost this year the way their fan base has been talking. Jeff Zeribic of The Athletic joins us to break down the Ravens. Jeff, it is good to talk to you, brother. It's been a while. How are you?
Good, but you guys from D.C. aren't calling people from Baltimore condescending. There's no way that's possible,
well,
is it?
I normally take your back on this constantly on this argument because Danny's like, oh, they hate us in Baltimore. I'm like, yeah, there's some condescension that goes their way from time to time. There's some little brother sunning. But all I'm doing sitting here, and I got Ravens fans calling me to tell me, you know, how much better Baltimore is than Washington and why Washington is a fraud. And I find that all very interesting is all. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I got you. I mean, Baltimore's playing well. There's no question about it. But this is a flawed team in a lot of ways. I mean, you know, the pass defense has been terrible. They've been as good as they've been in offense, and I know they're first in DVOA and all that. You know, there seems to be patches in every game where, you know, they sort of have a lull for two or three possessions. So they're still, you know, this team still has a lot to prove going forward. And I think, you know, just being around here in the building all week, they know the test that's going to come Sunday, you know, with the Commanders in town.
Jeff, one of those things where it's either going to be a footnote and forgotten, or it's going to be the turning point. I don't. Maybe there's an in between. I'm sure, but in this day of like declarative gavel slamming statements, who knows? But Zach Gore, I would say maybe you could say he struggled as a first year defensive coordinator. I'd probably point to a lot of the players and turnover, maybe some injuries. But what is bringing in Dean Pease as a second set of eyes? How do you expect that to manifest itself? Maybe this week or going forward? Is it going to be something where they go where you look back and go, man, that change really changed their season, or is it just an afterthought?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question, and I think there was, like, some talk, you know, I got it on my, you know, Twitter or X timeline about, oh, they felt like they had to do this before facing Jaden Daniels. This is something that was in the works for a while. They were trying to, you know, Zach Gore had contacted Dean Pease in the offseason about potentially coming here and helping out. You know, so we'll see how it works out, but here's the thing. I think everybody around this team expected there to be struggles defensively early. That's just kind of how it works. I mean, you know, Mike McDonald's was all the, you know, praise he got last year. His first half of season with the Ravens as defensive coordinator, they were trying to run him out of town too. I mean, it takes a while. And yes, the Ravens lost some defensive personnel in the offseason, Patrick Queen, Geno Stone, Jadeveon Clowney, Ronald Darby. But the biggest loss of all was defensive coaches. It's just, you know, not just Mike McDonald. You know, Denard Wilson, who is probably the best secondary coach in the league, is now leading that Titans defense. And, you know, voila, the Titans have the number one pass defense in football. That guy is really good at what he does. They miss him, too, on the back end. Anthony Weaver, now the Miami defensive coordinator, they miss him, too. So there's a major brain drain from the Ravens defensive coaching staff this offseason. Zach Gore has had some, you know, there has been a learning curve. There has been some problems. But it's not been as disastrous as some people make out. I mean, they completely shut down Josh Allen and the Bills. And then for two or three other games, they played three really great quarters, and then they just wilted in the fourth. So consistency has been an issue. Veterans that shouldn't be making mistakes that they're making has been an issue. And I just think Dean Pease in general is a veteran guy, can kind of settle things down a little bit, will be a resource for Zach Gore. And, you know, we don't know how it's going to work out. You know, if they all of a sudden start playing a lot better, people probably will point to that and say, you see what they did there. But I think in general, this defense was going to get better as the season went on anyway, just because you have a lot of young coaches who are still learning and should be getting better as the season goes on.
What's the Ravens' health like going into the game?
It's not a problem, Grant. I mean, there's, you know, around these parts, there seems to be such hand-wringing every year about injuries, but that can't be excuse for some of the inconsistencies this year. They've been pretty much healthy all year. They won't have Broderick Washington, one of their rotational defensive linemen. They won't have Malik Harrison, who started a little bit at outside linebacker, but it's more one of these, you know, early down guys who sets the edge and, you know, chips tight ends and stuff. He probably won't play, but, you know, you're talking guys who don't play a ton of snaps, don't play frontline snaps. I expect the three starters who have been limited a little bit in practice, Marlon Humphrey, Ronnie Stanley, and Rashad Bateman, barring a setback late in the week, I expect them all to go Sunday.
Jeff Zeriba covers the Ravens. That's why we're talking to him, breaking down the opponent here on G&D. The pass rush, I think at times has been really, really good, although just a sort of a couple of suspects. Is this sort of a unit that is about to break out in general, or we're just relying on the couple of guys up there at the top who have, I think, nine and a half of the team sack totals?
Yeah, one of the things that was so good about Mike McDonald is how they schemed pressure. You know, with some of their pressure packages and, you know, simulated blitzes, and they just were very creative what they did last year when they led the league in sacks. Jadeveon Clowney also had a monster year last year. I guess he had 9.5 sacks, but he was even more impactful than, you know, the statistics show. So I think they're missing him a little bit. But I also think in terms of, you know, they're still trying to scheme free runners at the quarterback and create some pressure without blitzing. And that's something that has to be worked on. You know, Kyle Van Noy has gotten every bit out of his, you know, his ability. He's a solid pass rusher. He's a smart veteran guy. He'll be a factor, but he's not kind of a guy that, you know, teams are, you know, feel like they worry about wrecking the game per se. And the other Ravens pass rushers are just young guys, you know, former first round pick Adafe Owe, former second round pick David Ajabo. Maybe they'll activate Yannick Ngakoue for this game or elevate him from the practice squad. But yeah, it's just not been consistent. They have been pretty good in the interior. Matabike and Travis Jones can be problematic with getting penetration. But, you know, when we talk about the pass defense and how they're ranked 31st, it's always, well, the secondary's getting beat and letting too many footballs get thrown over their heads. And that's a part of it, but also has been a part is just not a consistent enough pass rush and, you know, getting to the quarterback and impacting the quarterback. But they are capable, but they're just not one of these teams that you fear that aspect as much as some others.
Jeff, am I wrong in assuming that the Ravens no longer need this game? It's more of a want this game after three straight wins, and the schedule ahead is Tampa, Cleveland, Denver. It lightens up a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. I mean, you'll get, you know, you get the normal coach speak and, you know, about needing every game and not wanting to lose at home. But they've stabilized, right? I mean, they're out of the 0-2 hole. That doesn't mean they can't go back in it. But they've won three in a row. They found themselves offensively. They have a good thing going with an offensive identity. Their defense obviously needs to catch up, but they're in a much better spot. I was writing, which is unheard of in Baltimore here, I was writing about must-win games in like week 3, which, you know, is not usually where they're at. But they have dug themselves out of it, and now it's just kind of, you know, the Steelers have come back to the pack in the AFC North. The other two Ohio teams are struggling. So they're in a good spot right now where, you know, the must-win labels are no longer on a few of these games coming up.
Why hasn't Mark Andrews gotten going?
I think it's multi. One, they're in big packages a lot, and which I think is the most kind of interesting part of this game Sunday from an X's and O's standpoint. You know, Washington's in nickel more than any team in the NFL, and the last time the Ravens played a heavy nickel team was the Bills a couple weeks ago, and it was just a tough matchup for the Bills. The Ravens racked up like 275 rushing yards. And, you know, that's going to be, I think, a key. But the Ravens put a fullback on the field. They're two big tight ends who are better at blocking than Mark Andrews. And they're not afraid just to run the ball down your throat if you let them. I think that's part of it. Two, I think, you know, Mark Andrews had the major leg injury that he came back from last year. You know, so he had some rust to work out. He made like the return to the for the playoff game last year, but he wasn't right. So I think there was a little, and then he got in a major car accident around the facility, which was very serious, which is quite frankly, he escaped without a major injury, but it was a setback, right? He missed some time during training camp and all that. And then the third thing is, look, you know, we hear from Raven fans all the time asking, like, what happened to Mark Andrews? Why? And meanwhile, for years now, they've been complaining we rely too much on Mark Andrews. So I think there's a part of it this year where they're spreading the ball around more. They're getting their tight ends involved. Rashad Bateman's got a bigger role. Zay Flowers is their number one receiver. They're getting their backs more involved in the passing game. And there's only one football, and I just think Lamar Jackson's at a stage of his career where he can afford to depend less on Mark Andrews, and that's sort of what we're seeing.
Jeff Zeribick on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Lamar Jackson is off to another MVP-type start. 9 touchdowns. 1 interception, obviously what he does with his feet. What have you seen from him this year, and what is kind of left for him to prove other than, I guess, them just making deeper playoff runs?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right there. They were, as a team, and I'm not saying, you know, you're granted the playoffs. I mean, it obviously takes a lot to get there. But they were in the position this year, and they are in the position where there's going to be skepticism about the Ravens regardless until they're able to make a run to the Super Bowl. I mean, that's just how it is. That's sort of the case with Lamar Jackson. I mean, he's done everything you can possibly do in the regular season and won multiple MVP awards, and his the team's win-loss record with him as a starter is phenomenal. So the proven ground is going to come in January for Lamar Jackson, the Ravens, assuming they make it. And I know that's an assumption you just can't necessarily make. But as of now, he's playing the best football of his career. He's in complete control. They've asked him to do more at the line of scrimmage in terms of getting them out of bad plays. He has more power in terms of the whole play calling process. He's more involved than he's ever been. You know, he's got the big guy behind him to hand the ball off to. He's never had that. You know, they've had some good backs, and they've always been able to run the football, but they've never had Derrick Henry. So I think when you couple all those things, it's been a really good start for him. He's not making too many mistakes. He's taking care of the football. He's just playing at a really high level now, as high as we've seen him play, even in you know, the years he won the MVP.
Easy answer here, Jeff, but I'd love you to go into it. The Ravens' record with Lamar Jackson against the NFC is astounding. I've seen different numbers, yeah, whether it's 21-3 or 22-1 or something like that. The point is, it's a lot and then not a lot in the second column. Easy answer is they're good all the time when he plays. They, yeah, win a lot of their games. But why is it that dominant against the NFC?
Yeah, I mean, the one number I got, guys, 21-1.
There you go.
And their one loss is to, you know, a Ravens' longtime defensive coordinator, Wink Martindale, when they lost to the Giants a couple of years back. And obviously, Wink knew all about Lamar, how he played and practiced against him. So even that kind of has an asterisk because they knew him well going into that week. It's just so hard to simulate how he plays. And it's not just his athleticism, you know, and his, you know, how elusive he is and some of the ball handling stuff he does and taking the ball out of the running back's hands and keeping it and just some of the stuff they do at the mesh point, which teams just don't see. It's just the uniqueness of the offense as a whole. They just do things that other teams don't do. And I just think they're very tough to prepare for. And the teams that have been best, held Lamar Jackson down best, the Steelers come to mind, are teams that see him regularly and know what it is to play against their offense. They just do things differently, and they do it at with a lot of speed. So it's just very hard to prepare for. I mean, you have teams using wide receivers in practice to simulate him and doing other things. It's just tough. So I don't think that the teams that don't see it regularly, I think it kind of takes a while for them to settle in and realize what they're facing and get used to kind of the pace they do it and what the Ravens are doing. And oftentimes the Ravens have had 2 and 3 touchdown leads by the time defense sort of get a hang of it. And that probably is the best explanation for why they have that record against the NFC that they have.
Jeff, we'll let you out on a prediction of sorts. I don't know if you need to give us a score, but if you got one, we'll take it. How do you think the game plays out?
I am in the process of doing that. I'm pretty far along. I think I picked 26-20 Ravens. The Ravens play everybody close. Like you just learned, it doesn't really matter. So I go into pretty much every Ravens game thinking it's going to be a one-score game. But, I've been amazed what I've seen by the Washington offense and just the poise and maturity that Daniels plays with. I think this is going to be a really tough challenge for the Ravens. But I think it could be a mismatch, Ravens offense versus the Washington defense, just because Washington's a nickel so much, and the Ravens have the ability to get big and just keep pounding with the run game, and then that opens up things to play action. So that's why I give them the edge, but it's a slight edge. I think it's going to be this game, for all the talk, we haven't seen really the only memorable stuff that's really happened in the regular season matchups is the RG3 unfortunate injury. So I think this has the ability to be kind of the most memorable game these two teams have played. I think it's going to be a good one.
Jeff, great info, man. Really appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too, guys. Great talking to you.
You too, brother. There's Jeff Cerebic. Check him out in The Athletic. Covers the Ravens in Baltimore. He's got a similar feel to what I have. That 6-7 point Ravens win, both teams in the 20s. Over-under is set for right around 50, and I never take the over when the number starts in the 50 in the NFL. But it does feel like this is going to be a game where both teams move the ball.
Yeah, I think the ball will move without question. I also wonder if there'll be so much effective running that it may limit the score. Instead of think Miami Dolphins when everybody's healthy, 2 plays, touchdown, go back the other way, 3 plays, touchdowns, like a fast break offense or like 1980s hockey. This feels like everyone's going to run the ball well, and you would think, and that leads to longer drives, maybe a little bit. Everyone's going to move the ball and score a lot of conversions. I don't know how many touchdowns it'll be. So I've got an under there as well, but I think offenses will be effective.
First of 2 chance to win Caps tickets today. Right now, caller 10-800-636-1067. As promised, you're going to win a pair of tickets. You're going to see the Capitals and the Stars next Thursday, the 17th, in 6 days at Capital One Arena. For tickets and the complete cap schedule, go to thefandc.com/events. The other chance for you to win Capitals tickets, if you don't win them right now today, will be at 4:45. That is when you will be competing in a game of Does Ryan Know It to win those Caps tickets. Next, if the Commanders win, what will we be saying? And if they lose, what's going to be the dialogue in town? This is The Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
We will win off the field at 3:45, coming up in a little over 15 minutes on Grant and Danny, and we will get you blitzed at 4 o'clock with the teams in town you care the most about. Grant and Danny here on The Fan as we welcome you back. What are people going to be saying if Washington beats Baltimore? Let's start right there. We come in here on Monday on a victory Monday. Doesn't really matter how it plays out. Commanders beat the Ravens. What is the narrative going to be?
This is a contender. I don't just mean, hey, wouldn't it be nice if Philadelphia doesn't get right and you can win the division? You could go to the postseason ahead of schedule. This means contender. Like, raise the ceiling. Some people are there already, and I think that's awesome. You're excited about it. It's cool. To me, nothing is unreasonable anymore. There's no okay homer, okay guy that drinks the Kool-Aid every time Ron Rivera gets hired or whatever. No. This is a real thing.
I think as of Monday, if they win, to your point, nothing's off the table, and anything you want to say plays. You'll be 5-1 through 6. Your head coach will be one of the leaders in the Coach of the Year race. Your quarterback will be one of the leaders in the MVP race, not the Rookie of the Year race, which he will for the moment have. They might even take the damn award off the board if he balls out in a win this week. I mean, he'll have 5 Rookie of the Week honors through 6 weeks. Maybe it eventually goes back on the board if something changes, but for the short term, they might even just take the thing off the board altogether. Cliff Kingsbury, Assistant Coach of the Year, you know, Adam Peters, Executive of the Year, like they're all in the running. Just a bunch of hardware. It's like one of those movies where everyone wins the Oscar, and the Oscar for editing goes to, and the Oscar for sound goes to, and the Oscar for costume goes to, and the Oscar for acting goes to, and the Oscar for best picture, like just a clean sweep.
Just a sweep.
That's where we are. If they lose, what are we going to be saying?
I've got two. If it's a blowout, if it's a non-starter, if Baltimore
I'll
dominates.
Give you two different game styles.
Yeah.
First one is Washington plays its worst game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It's over in the late third quarter, it feels like, and they lose like 30-13.
Fun while it lasted, right? Cool. We had a great time. You can't take those 4 weeks away where I was prom king and all my clothes fit and I look good in pictures. You know, but maybe let's all slow our roll a little bit. They leveled up, they played someone really, really good, and they got the tar beat out of them, right? Okay, that's that one. If the other scenario that they lose, but it's back and forth and it takes up, you know, fourth and goal, this time Isaiah Likely's toe is inbounds, right? And they win the game, talking about Baltimore, then you go, we can play with anybody. Our philosophy and on or our belief in who we are, our evaluation based on what we've seen the last, with this will now be 5 weeks, team's still for real. Team's still really good. Jaden Daniels is still really good. They've got something here. You dropped one. Nobody was going on. They were going 16-1. That was a pretty good game, and we'll see those guys again.
I think if they lose the game close, we'll echo some thoughts here. It's still, to me, I don't do like moral victory Monday or whatever, but it's still a step in the correct direction. It's not a step backwards. I still feel better about them making the playoffs, better about them winning the division, better about this being something you can put in cement here and write in Sharpie that they're actually good. They're going to be around all season long. If they lose ugly, if they get blown out, I don't think I'm going to even feel like it was fun while it lasted. I'm going to say one part, they had their bad game, like they had the Tampa game or whatever. You're allowed to have those. And one part, Baltimore's a terrible matchup. They'd have to really lay an egg against like Carolina for me to say fun while it lasted. Losing to a Ravens team that I don't think is a good matchup on paper for Washington. I think that if you play them 10 times, they beat you 7, something like that. There's really no path to me feeling like it's revealing that they're not that good. I think styles make fights in a sense, and I don't love this fight for them.
Yeah, I don't either.
So that's kind of where I'd be on that. All right, let's spin around the NFL. Let's look at some of the other big games of the weekend. Spending a lot of time, as you'd imagine, on Washington and Baltimore, both because it's local and it's the best game of the weekend. Some of the other notables, Caleb Williams played a lot better last week. He'll try to make it 2 in a row for the Bears, Danny. They're trying to get the 4-2 at Soldier Field when they play the Jacksonville Jaguars. They fended off the dogs this past week, finally with a win over the Indianapolis Colts to get to 1-4, but there's still some barking outside the front door for Doug Peterson.
Yeah, everybody's over 500 than NFC North. So it's better than, I don't want to say better than we thought. We thought it'd be a pretty competitive division, and I guess it's playing out that way. The surprise is that Minnesota's at 5-0. And you touched on it. Jacksonville's trying to have a season. It's trying to keep it on the rails so that you can stay relevant. As Houston now has a 2.5 or 3-game lead, depending on who you're talking about, over everyone else in that stupid AFC South. But yeah, the Wolves are at the door.
Let's go to Green Bay. Lambeau Field, best place to watch a game in the National Football League. Packers at home hosting the Cardinals. I just don't like Arizona as much coming cross-country toward the East Coast. Has not been kind to them in the 1 o'clock window over the last couple of seasons. Green Bay 3-2, chance to get to 4-2. If that's what happens, they'll have won 4 of their last 5, with the lone loss being that two-pointer to the Vikings when they actually fell behind 28-7 and then came all the way back in that game. Will be back-to-back wins with Jordan Love going into the Texans and Jaguars over the next couple of weeks. Feels like a pretty big game for Green Bay to try to keep up with Minnesota. I mean, the Vikings do have a bye this week, so the Packers could pull to within a half game or so with the Vikings.
Yeah, very winnable game for Green Bay at home. Surprised there wasn't more love after Arizona did what they did this past week to San Francisco. That was one of the more impressive wins, I would say, of the week. They're 5.5-point dogs going on the road, but I think it speaks to your point that, you know, I don't think the odds makers love them going back across country playing at 1 p.m. against a Green Bay team that's very sound. We haven't seen the full holy crap Jordan Love MVP candidate thing that a lot of us thought was coming. Now, I know he's been derailed by that injury there in week one, and it hasn't really clicked just yet. There were some drops this past week from his receivers, but Green Bay is just very solid all around. Very well-coached team. I expect them to get a W this weekend.
Texans, Patriots in New England. Happy Drake May Day to Patriots fans. He is making his first NFL start in Foxborough. 4-1 Houston against 1-4 New England. The Patriots were worried about Drake May behind their offensive line, which has given up the worst pressure percentage in the league. So they waited until they played the team that gets the most pressure in the NFL, Houston, to debut him. Nothing they've done makes a whole lot of sense, but at some point, the kid's got to play football.
Yeah, Houston, by the way, is 4-1, and they're good. This is not me criticizing Houston. They haven't played that great yet, it feels like, right? C.J. Stroud is
scary.
Yeah, C.J. Stroud's a baller, and that's kind of my point here is, you know, they're going to get going, and what does that look like? I mean, they're already 4-1 again with a couple impressive wins in there, one terrible loss at Minnesota, but they sort of eked by Chicago, eked by Jacksonville, played a competitive game against Buffalo wherever either team could have won. So this is a chance for them to kind of start to flex a little bit and get right. Now, this stuff like this always happens, right? Where on paper it looks like they're going to go dominate because, as you said, it should be a feeding frenzy. And then for some reason, maybe it's not. And we're trying to left to pick up the pieces. But on paper, this game, Houston should go in and dominate.
Drake May's not the only rookie quarterback making his first start this weekend. In New Orleans at the Superdome, the Bucs are paying the Saints a visit. And Spencer Rattler will be filling in for Derek Carr, who's going to miss not one but two games because they play again on Thursday night against the Chargers. So he will miss both of those games, means at least two starts for Rattler. The Bucs with a really good chance to get to 4-2 and keep up with Atlanta in the NFC South.
So this is what I thought New Orleans was going to be, not without Derek Carr. I've had no idea he'd be hurt. But before the season, I said, I think Dennis Allen gets fired. They're not real good to me. I don't get what their plan is. I don't know what they're doing. Well, then they scored 45.5 a game through 2 weeks, and idiots like me were forced to eat their words. Now they've sunk back down. It's kind of a, you know, they're sliding down the mountain a little bit, looking for a handhold. Tough matchup for them with the Tampa Bay team that's pretty decent.
Three straight losses. They've scored 12, 24, and 13, so twice sub-15 during a three-game losing streak to the Eagles, Falcons, and Kansas City Chiefs now. Speaking of the Saints, let's keep it moving. Sunday matchups in the NFL on Grant and Danny. The Browns are 1-4. We just saw them here in Landover. They are a disaster, and that offense is gross. They get the Philadelphia Eagles at Lincoln Financial Field. Browns are 1-4. Philly is 2-2. Feels like a nice little get-right opportunity for the Eagles. They're off of a bye, taking on Deshaun Watson. Remember, Philly was very interested in Deshaun Watson if you go back in time. They wanted him badly. They dodged a real bullet there. It's been an inconsistent season for the Eagles. Win-loss, win-loss, bye. They come out of the bye. I think they win big.
I do, too. 9.5-point spread in that one at Philadelphia.
Also, A.J. Brown's back. I think Devontae Smith is back.
I was going to say, I hadn't seen an injury report just yet, finally, for Friday.
They both fully practiced yesterday.
So there you go. I would expect Philadelphia maybe has a chance here. Looking at their schedule, they survived. They didn't perform particularly well by their standard, but they've got a pretty easy schedule coming up. It starts this week against Cleveland. We could look up in a few weeks, and they could be 7-4, 8-3, something like that. So this is where I think it begins.
AFC South matchup, Colts-Titans. Anthony Richardson is getting healthier. There's some thought that he could be back very soon for the Colts. They're in a weird situation because I think you got to play Richardson ASAP and for the duration of the year, and you're trying to figure out what he is. But I also don't think there's any debate that they're better offensively with Joe Flacco on the field right now because Richardson's been a bit of a mess. He's inaccurate. He just misses too many throws. But he's also got all the talent in the world. and they drafted him in the top five. So kind of a strange situation. They're 2-3. They're playing the 1-3 Titans, who look like they're ticketed for the top of the draft board.
Yeah, Titans have not been frisky like I predicted they would be. For the Colts, you mentioned it's an interesting spot. I still think their team, talent-wise, is pretty good. But you drafted a project. And would you be surprised that a project showed up? Now, what's derailed this thing is Richardson's been hurt a bunch, and maybe you'd argue that's inevitable with his playing style. But someone who's that big, that fast, that strong, with that kind of arm strength, you got to be patient here. Someone that demanded patience, but maybe you don't have any because you're competitive in a bad division.
Chargers off a bye against the Broncos. This is a 4 o'clock window game on Sunday, so you get to watch this one after Commanders-Ravens. Denver's getting better performances out of Bo Nix here. They hung 34 on the Raiders. He looked really good last week. You can see he's feeling himself a little bit. He's shouting at Sean Payton on the sideline. They're giving each other the back and forth and the what for. They beat the Bucs 26-7. Then they got a one-point win over the Jets in a gross weather game. Then they handled the Raiders 34-18. So that's three in a row for Denver. And again, they get Spencer Rattler on a short week Thursday Night Football after the Chargers. Now, the Chargers are off a bye, but if they can somehow beat L.A. this weekend, they could be looking at a potential 5-game winning streak and a 5-3 record.
Fun little thing I was looking up when thinking about some topics for the show and a bit of discussion. I happened to go down a little rabbit hole and start clicking on Denver, some things, some stats, talking about Bo Nix and the like. You don't know who's a linebacker's assistant coach for them. You don't know. Greg Minuski. Old Greg Minuski found a landing spot in charge of just a specific group of linebackers. Not all the linebackers. Just a couple of guys, really. Inside guys, I'll be able to coach you. But for Denver, they're doing kind of what they did last year. Remember, they got off to that terrible start, including losing to Washington, and they looked unprofessional and awful. All of a sudden, here they go. They're 3-2. They won three straight games. You mentioned one of them is incredibly gross, that win against the Jets. But they've got a chance now with the Chargers. You mentioned the Saints on short rest. Carolina, we could look up with Denver having a pretty decent record here through the midway point of the season.
Steelers, Raiders in Vegas. Pittsburgh is 3-2. The Raiders are 2-3, and the Raiders have made a quarterback change. It's AOEC time. Aiden O'Connell starting over Gardner Minshew. For the Steelers, perhaps one last ride for Justin Fields. They've lost two straight. Mike Tomlin was asked last week, how does Fields keep his job with now Russell Wilson finally back practicing in full? And he said, win? Well, I guess that means they got to find a way to pull this one out against the Raiders. If they are 3-3 with three straight losses, I think there's a possibility Russell Wilson starts a primetime
game
against the Jets on Sunday night next week.
Yeah, the Raiders aren't very good. I think that's pretty clear. The Steelers are odd because one of their groups, that defense, is awesome. It travels. When T.J. Watt plays, they are disruptive and tough to deal with, and he's presumably playing. He's good to go. So the Steelers' offense is terrible. It's about doing just enough. So whoever can give you just enough, that's the guy you end up playing. But it's a strange-looking group here for this modern NFL.
The other two games on Sunday afternoon, the Falcons are at the Panthers. This is a very strange 4 o'clock game, by the way, in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand that at all. Maybe they moved it after the weather in Carolina or something.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't either. But Atlanta's 3-2. They got to handle their business, get to 4-2 against the Panthers, coming off of a huge overtime win against the Bucs. And then you've got the Lions and the Cowboys at 4:25.
That's a great one.
That's your nationally televised Kevin Burkhardt Tom Brady game, I'd imagine. If Dallas can win, they're 4-2, but you got to like the Lions to get to 4-1 probably on paper.
Coming off their bye as well. So that's a group that's got one weird, strange loss at Tampa where they outgained them by a whole bunch, still find a way to lose the game. But people kind of forgot about Detroit, how good they are. I think you saw some of that this past week when they played Seattle. But I think that's a game where Dallas kind of needs it to get some good vibes going, and I think Detroit shellacks them.
All right, let's win off the field next, Danny. We do this for Bruce Allen, and we want you guys to honor Bruce's time in Washington and all the good he did for the then Redskins by calling in now and telling us what little moral victory made you smile today that nobody else would care about. But I also think this is a good opportunity. How are you spending this crisp fall weekend?
Mm.
Anybody getting out and about? We're doing a little pumpkin patch situation. We're going to eat a little apple cider donut. Ever had one of those?
No, I haven't tasted
it. Maybe we got a little bonfire. My neighbor just texted me. We might be doing a little bourbon sipping and watching some sport outdoor tonight. Fired up about that. Grant and Danny on the Fan. But then do they stay there? Oh, okay.
That's after they go up.
Got it.
Once they go up.
It is time to win off the field on Grant and Danny. It is Friday just before 4 o'clock, 3:45. Every day at this time, a double play driven by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Stop in for a great deal on the rugged and capable Honda Pilot. Contact your local Washington area Honda dealers today. The double play is winning off the field. Don't do it for me. Don't do it for Danny. Do it for Goose, who one day said these words.
We're winning off the field, but we got to start winning on the field.
Yeah, we won't let him forget it either. It's just too fun. So what's an off-the-field win? It is something that doesn't matter. It's something minor. Something like, it's cool out. A lot of people are putting the jacket on for the first time in many, many months. You might find a dollar bill in that jacket. If that were to happen, therefore you would be.
Winning off the field?
Today, I wore jeans for the first time in a long time.
Here we go.
Threw on my jeans. You don't know how they're going to feel, how they're going to fit. Button that button, snug just so. Everything looked and felt just like I wanted it to.
All the right places there?
I mean,
yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It didn't look just like I wanted it to.
I don't know what you
mean. The jeans went on, and I didn't have major issues. Therefore, I was.
Winning off the field?
Normally, Friday evenings for my oldest soccer team, they have this big, sort of huge, mega joint soccer practice with a couple other clubs, which is actually really cool, but it's in the depths of Chantilly. It's like where Chantilly ends and like kind of the sun meets the horizon, and you know, they run out of water and they would be scared to sail over it if it was Spain back in the 1400s. You know what I mean? Well, they don't have that tonight. No practice tonight because they got a tournament this weekend. So the tournament's going to be a kick in the giblets. It's going to be a nice punt to the shins. But there's no practice in Chantilly tonight, thus saving the wife and I from transportation issues. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
Now, this is going to be a version that wouldn't work. Don't tell us about on-the-field wins.
Mm-mm.
Major life accomplishments.
Okay.
Things that everyone will understand to be a victory or something that actually happens between the lines.
Right. Winning on the field.
Thank you,
Bruce. Example I'll give you is the mighty Annandale Adams last night.
Okay.
I was on the scene. I was reporting live on the scene last night.
Yeah?
You know the Annandale Adams, sponsored by the Grant and Danny radio program.
I do know them, yes.
They got themselves a big win last night.
Here we go.
Over justice.
Winning on the field.
They are off the schneid, as they say.
Yeah, justice was served, am I right? Here we go.
Here we go.
Thank you, Al.
Silly 37-point output by the Bulls,
really?
I believe. Oh, Carlos was running wild. Noah making
plays. Dude, the Adams dropped 37?
Noah's rolling right and finding deep shots in the end zone. I mean, it was a beautiful game for the locals.
Ha!
But that is not an off-field win. That would not work.
Okay.
Therefore, I am.
Winning on the field.
See what I'm saying?
You
not
switched
what
it up.
This is about.
You did.
Here we go. Rich
bit.
And only. Go ahead.
Richard.
Come on, boys. How you feeling today?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, quick shout out to my wife who's going to be running the Chicago Marathon this Sunday.
So far.
Saying good luck.
Did she consider running a marathon somewhere near where she lives?
That's never occurred.
Okay.
Yep.
You guys love leaving each other in the area and going somewhere else. That's what you love to do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, she left, I stayed, but it worked out.
All right.
Yeah, they do.
Shut up,
Danny.
Going to have a bunch of people over on Sunday. I'm going to order a bunch of pies. And then in the mail is the buy one, get one pizzas from Little Caesars. So it's going to be pizza and whiskey. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
Sounds like a good time.
Dude, I haven't had Little Caesars in forever.
I see the commercials all
the time. Pizza,
pizza. It's probably been 15 years.
You sleep on those ads.
Well, I don't sleep on the ads at all, but
pizza,
I sleep
pizza.
On the pizza. I wouldn't know it if I saw it.
When's the last time you had Little Caesars?
I was 10 years old. Something like that.
Did you know it's the official pizza of the NFL now, by the way?
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Is it
really? The
official
sponsor of the NFL pizza.
I feel like I see the ads a lot, so that makes a little bit of sense. Although I wouldn't know if you gave me $1 million in a compass right now and I had 3 hours to find a Little Caesars, it ain't happening unless I can use a GPS. I mean, there's just no way. Drew, Graysonville, how are you winning off the field?
Guys, it's been a great day. I've been preparing for tailgate for Sunday all day, and I went to get oysters because we're going to grill some oysters out there. And I went to one of the oyster places out here in Graysonville, and I pulled up, and I said I need to get a case of oysters. And the fishing boat was just coming in.
Ooh.
They pulled it right from the boat into my case.
Oh, come
on. So
I love that.
The freshest oysters you can get.
So what do you do now? You keep them on ice until then, or do you have to keep them?
Yeah, they're on ice.
Okay.
It's 48 hours. That's about as good as you can get.
All right.
Winning off the field.
That's pretty legit.
He's headed to Baltimore for a football match. Let's go to Dan in Fairfax. What's up, Dan?
Hey, boys. So this is the second week in a row that my boss has called me and said, hey, you can leave a little early. And I called last week and said that. But like all good sequels, like Empire Strikes Back, Beethoven 2, Godfather 2, we have to amp it up.
Beto snuck in there.
Such
all by
silly. Sorry, Ted, hold on. You popped the room.
That's a good
you
one.
You popped the room. Go ahead, Zach. Go ahead. Go ahead, please, please, please. Yeah.
Oh, what happened?
We ruined it.
No, we didn't ruin it.
We ruined it because we were laughing.
One of us ruined it. It was not me.
Oh, it was me, I guess.
You stopped him in his tracks. You made him stop.
He may have said the thing, and I was talking over him.
That's possible.
That's absolutely ludicrous,
sir.
I ruined it. Fine, I'll take it.
No, I'm not rubbing your nose.
That's fine. I ruined it.
I'm just saying. You could have laughed without stopping him. Why did you stop him?
I didn't want to roll past that. Reason to Empire, Godfather, Beethoven 2.
It's a great line.
It popped me.
I tell you what, that was better than whatever he's going to say anyway. He made a funny joke that made us laugh. Therefore, we are.
There you go.
Winning on the field.
What? Whoa!
That's ridiculous.
Bruce!
That is ridiculous!
Winning off the field?
God, Bruce! That's ridiculous! You can't do anything right still!
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
Well, it makes you feel better. He's right.
That's a good point.
It makes you feel better. You feel better? I feel better.
Armando, how are you?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
So I haven't been feeling great all week. Just had some kind of upset stomach. Haven't been feeling great. But I haven't Leroy'd. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field?
That's a deeper cut. You got to have been listening.
I mean, the real ones know.
A few days ago.
Man.
When's the last time you Leroy'd?
I haven't. Well, it's several months now.
Okay.
Yeah, I Leroy'd when I overate 5 months ago.
Justin in Arlington. What's good?
Well, guys, so a couple weeks ago, I noticed that my grass was looking a little patchy out front.
I had to go to
Home Depot. Mm-hmm. I had to navigate that place.
Big Saturday.
Found myself some good grass seed. Came home, started doing some work, and my wife was a little frustrated because the boys were alone with her. She wanted some help. 2 weeks later, this morning, outside, out front, out of nowhere, unsolicited, my wife says, "This grass looks really good."
Wow.
Therefore, I'm winning.
Winning off the field.
That is a dad win, too. That he's worried about his yard. He's getting some grass seed.
That's two birds with one stone right there, sir.
We're going to Home Depot. Going to be a big weekend. Let's go to Stub in Richmond. This is the Stub, I would imagine, right? This is AWOD Stub.
That's me. What's up, guys?
Oh, hey,
what's
dude?
Up, brother?
I wanted to say I was at the state fair the other day. It was hot. Mm-hmm. So I went to the vending machine, put in $3 to get a drink. First, nothing came out, started with disaster. Then, put in another $3, decided to take my gamble. About 20 drinks pour out of the vending machine. I spread it amongst the people around me.
Winning off the field.
Has the difficult task of finding takers for a lot of drinks.
Yeah, he's the soda god king at that point.
That's amazing. B, drinks cost $3 in a vending machine now? What is the world coming to? 2024, the year of our Lord. I mean, that is absurd. I guess it makes sense, because when I was in elementary school as a wee lad, it was like 50 cents.
Yeah, 50 cents.
And any machine in a place would be a dollar. But I remember, I don't know, they must cost $20 now at King's Dominion, because I still remember I would go to King's Dominion, and the Coke machines, it was like $5.50 for a bottle of Coke. And this was in probably 2006. So it must be $42 for a bottle of Coke now
the
at
revolt
King's Dominion.
The student body led when they jumped it to 55 cents from 50. I mean, you would have thought they'd invaded a foreign country at that point. It was unreal.
Wow. I'm being told there's a Little Caesars on Little River Turnpike.
No, there's not. I mean, maybe there is, but like, no, there's not. You see what I'm saying?
Annandale area, they're saying.
Maybe.
Near Annandale High School, home of the Adams. Grant and Danny on the fan. The Beltway Blitz is next, 4:45. We got Caps tickets for you. You can win them if you guess correctly, if Ryan knows it or not. And our Commanders over-under with the FanDuel player projections coming up at 4:25.